content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning, it's a new week. Welcome to Monday, November 11th.
We are back.
We're back with a vengeance, goddammit.
Roar! Roar!
How can you not be in a great mood when we have such beautiful weather here, you know?
I know. You wake still up to going strong. It's November and we're still sunny.
Clear sky, sunny, beautiful. Just
although,
beautiful.
You know what I'm noticing looking out the window right now? Mm-hmm. There are some trees here that change color. Yeah.
Yeah, there are.
I mean, it's nothing like, you know, like the Midwest.
No, it's nothing like that.
But there, you know, there's some like red-ish
trees
and yellow-ish trees down there. You know, just noticing a little bit. Of course, palm trees don't do that.
No, palm trees don't do that. They stay
palm
the same color.
Palm trees don't change
all
colors. Yeah. Neither does our little marijuana-looking plant money tree in the studio here, but...
It does look like marijuana, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? I know everybody says that, and I'm like, yeah. But it's called a money tree?
Yeah, that's what they call it. I mean, I'm sure it's got like a scientific name, botanic name or something, but but I don't know what the name of it is. And but if this was marijuana, it would stink in here big time.
Would it?
Yeah, those plants really smell strong.
Oh, wow. Does it smell like marijuana? Like when people smoke it, is that what the plant smells like?
No, it smells different. You know, I mean, it smells like a flower or something, or like some kind of weed. Oh. But and they got different smells. Every strain has a different smell to it, you know.
Huh.
But, yeah, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of different ones, but marijuana smells really strong. That's why it's hard to grow it at home if you live in an apartment or something.
Right,
yeah. They tell you not to, it's going to be too obvious. So, so much for the marijuana lessons for this morning.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm clueless when it comes to that stuff, so.
Yeah. Well, later in the show, we're going to have Sandra Champlin, who we tried to talk to last week, but we had some technical problems, so we asked her to call back in today. And we're going to talk about grief and death and so forth. So she's got some encouraging things for us, so we'll see.
Yeah, I'm glad we're having her back because it seemed really, really interesting.
Yeah, and she was fun too.
That she has to say.
She's definitely a fun person. So.
Oh yeah, of course.
So in a few minutes, and how was your weekend? Your James Bond parties and everything.
It was great. Yeah? Oh my goodness, I was wearing this beautiful long dress.
Well, so you're a Bond
evening
girl.
Evening gown. Oh
yeah,
yes,
I mean, what
I
the
was.
Hell? Yeah, I mean. Even without dressing up, you look like a Bond girl. I mean, what the hell,
thanks.
You know? Yeah, it's not like you really need to dress up for it.
You know, I just... Yeah.
So what was it? Just like a nightgown? I mean, not a nightgown, but a...
An evening gown.
An evening
gown. A long dress.
Right.
It was like bluish colored, and it was all lace. Mm. And then like the fabric would like stop like around, I don't know, like just like above my knees, and then the rest was just like lace just by itself, like see-through.
Yeah.
But the rest of it underneath was fabric.
Sounds
and it was
good.
Like kind of crisscross in the back, and it was like kind of low cut. Like it was like everything that I was looking for.
Yeah. I'm sure all the women looked hot there, you know, being Bond girls and everything. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yes, yeah, there were some other females wearing long dresses and
really
evening gowns like mine, yeah.
Were there girls wearing other things other than that? Like how would they envision a Bond girl?
You know what? I know I talked to a few girls that were like, I didn't know what to wear. Like, do I wear a bikini? Do I wear a fancy dress? Like,
right.
There's so many different requirements all of the from
above,
a Bond
yeah.
girl. Like, you know, some girls kind of went like that, you know, like that kind of like badass, like sporty look, you know, like if they were to be like, you know, fighting or something. So, yeah, there was many different variations of Bond girl, but no bikinis. Oh, no, just kidding. Well, there was. I mean, that doesn't really count because it was like part of the show. You know, that's kind of like the new thing with these big, you know, parties in the hills. They have, you know, they like to have a bit of entertainment. And usually it involves like fire dancers of some sort.
Yeah.
And it is quite interesting.
I see those every time I go to
like,
this guy's party.
Yeah, this
say fire.
You've seen that before?
Yeah, I mean, there's this guy who always brings them every party, you know. So I've seen him a million times, and it's nice, like you said, it's cool. But
this is probably like the fourth party that I've seen, but different people, different fire dancers. Because this one party had like these two girls that, you know, were like spinning fire,
right.
Which was really cool. And then, you know, there's this other party with these two guys that would do like the fire blowing,
right.
You know, and then they would spin fire and, you know, because it was two of them, so they would do like tricks and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was cool. However, this one was, it was a little different. It was this guy with many different like fire and like electricity tools. And, you know, the girl that was assisting him was actually just a girl at the party. Like, it was somebody that we knew.
Really?
And all of a sudden she's standing up there like on the couch on like a towel in her bikini. And I'm like, oh, what? Okay. This should be interesting. Everyone's like, the show's about to start. The show. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess she's part of the show. So this guy, you know, he rubs, like, the oil stuff on her, and he's just basically, like, lighting her vagina on fire.
Really?
Yes.
Now, why would he do that?
Yes, and it was, like, it was more of a, I don't know, like, and so, like, most of those shows have, like, that big, like, wow factor.
Right.
This was much more of, like, a intimate, like, close-up kind of show.
Right.
And, and I'm looking, and all of a sudden she's got, like, her top off, and he's, like, lighting her nipples on fire.
Really?
Yes! But obviously, I mean, he has, like, the special stuff, so it's not gonna burn, her
you?
Body or
wow.
her clothing. But, yeah, and he was just, like, doing something. He'd have her, like, turn around and then, like, stick her butt out, and then he'd be, like, lighting her ass on fire.
Really?
And then, yeah.
And she took off her top, no problem.
And, yeah. I mean, it was really dark, but I look, and I realize that the bikini is, like, totally moved over, and her nips are, like, completely exposed.
Whoa.
And, and then he had, like, you know those things that you see in, like, those, like, weird kind of, like a Spencer's store. I don't know if they're out here, but they're in Chicago.
Yeah.
They have like those balls with like the purple and blue, like electricity.
Right.
You know, and if you touch it, it all goes to like where your finger
to the glass,
is. It like, shocks
right.
you kind of. And they've got like the one that's like a stick. Yeah, he was using that too along her body. So it looked like lightning bolts going on her body. It was,
That sounds pretty unique, you know.
It was very interesting.
Yeah. God, the stuff that gets people off, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
But as long as it was fun. Now, all the guys were James Bond, or were there some, like, villains and stuff? Like Scaramanga or something from The Golden Gun. Man with the Golden Gun.
No, I didn't particularly see any villains. I mean, you know, some guys dressed in, like, you know, tuxedos, and
right.
some guys were just dressed like normal. I mean, some guys were dressed in t-shirts and jeans and flip-flops. You know, it's L.A., so there's always going to be...
Doesn't sound like James Bond.
There's always going to be one of those, you know, that just shows up and just doesn't, you know, like it's totally in like jeans and a t-shirt. It's like not participating. But it's L.A., like people do that. Like they have their own sense of style, so no matter what the requirements of the dress code is, they're going to...
They're gonna wear whatever they want, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's LA.
But
that's
it
right.
was, you know, it was Bond-ish for the, you know, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And
cool.
The DJ was pretty good. So.
Yeah, did they have some James Bond music and stuff too?
No, but you know, I think on the TV he had like a reel of, you know, James Bond movies playing,
okay.
so that was kind of cool.
Okay.
But
sounds good, because I mean, I love James Bond. I think a lot of people do. And everybody's got their favorite and so forth, you know.
But
like I mentioned before, you know, the latest one, I just can't get into them.
Yeah, I know. They haven't been quite up to par.
No. They changed it with Daniel Craig. I don't know what they did, but it's different.
Yeah, I feel like with Daniel Craig, he just seems like kind of a dick. You know what I mean? Like, James Bond is not an asshole. He's not a dick. He's just a badass, you know? But he's, like, super, like, suave and charming. And, like, I don't really get that from Daniel Craig.
Right. Yeah, he's more rugged and
stuff. Pierce Brosnan was so, you know, handsome and well put together. And he just, you know, he just did such a good job. And
I don't know.
It's just all different now.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I've lost interest in James Bond because of it. And that's sad because I've loved James Bond from the beginning. But, you know, what are you going to do?
What are you
going to
do?
What are you going to do, Mia? So your Chicago Bears lost yesterday. Yeah. I'm on top of that.
And you know what I think? I don't know. I mean, I personally.
But not by much. I mean, 2 points.
Well, I know that's the thing. I mean, towards the end, gosh, we were fighting so hard. Like,
really?
we really should have won. But it was just like, it was like tooth and nail, man.
Really? It was that tough, huh?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It really was.
So, I mean, was it a good game, though?
I mean, especially towards the end, because the way we were coming back and then getting let down and then still coming back and still fighting, like, it's just, we really, you know, we really should have won that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Detroit Lions, for crying out loud.
They've never been such a strong team. Yeah, they never used to be, but this season, you know, they've been doing pretty okay.
I
know them as being, like, you know, not that great of a team.
That's true. I mean, Detroit is leading their division.
But
not the division, but the
for the NFC.
Yeah, their division.
North,
yeah, NFC
whatever,
North.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. So they're 6-3. Chicago's 5-4. Green Bay is 5-4. Minnesota is way back at 2-7. But yeah, I mean, so it's amazing, you know, because I never remember the Detroit Lions being such a great team.
I know.
But
it's interesting how that happens.
Yeah.
You know.
I know. Well,
nowhere,
coaches change, players change, you know, cultures change. And like, for example, with Dallas got their asses kicked yesterday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they played New Orleans 49-17, man. And they really screwed up, you know. And what I don't understand is why they're still considered America's team.
Right?
They never
win. It's funny. I had a conversation with somebody about that yesterday.
Yeah, they never win. I mean, what kind of a team is that?
Why is it America's team? Like, they're awful.
It was 30 years ago, but not now.
Yeah, we need, you know? Okay, yeah, we need to pick a new, you know.
They used to be a very strong team, you know, and they had a lot of stars.
For sure.
Dallas was known as, like, you know, the strongest team.
Yeah.
And that's why it became America's team. You know?
I know. I feel like everybody, you know, like the Cowboys, just to say that they did, even if they weren't super huge football fans, be like, oh, yeah, the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah,
but
I know
now
that,
it's
right.
Like, okay, you got to stop saying that. There's no point. Like, they're not that great.
They're really not, you know. I mean, but let's see. Well, they're on top of the division along with Philadelphia with 5-5. But, So, but that's not a great record, you know.
No.
Yeah. I mean, look at some people, some teams, like Seattle is 9-1. Wow.
Seahawks.
That's pretty cool, huh?
I do like their uniforms.
Kansas City, 9-0.
What? The neon.
Who?
The neon uniforms, the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, really? They have a neon now?
Yeah, look at their, click on their uniform.
Okay, well,
it's cool. It's got like a bit of like a neon like streak in it. I don't know. I just think it looks cool.
Really?
The new uniforms, yeah.
Like the jerseys and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh,
and like
okay.
The pants,
well, they're not showing
a
picture.
Helmet. It's cool.
Oh, okay. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Because the logo hasn't changed.
Welcome to the Sunday Blitz. I'm Kerry Chow.
What the hell is this?
ESPN NFL analyst Tom Waddle.
I hate websites that start talking, man. I mean, they've got to give you the option of, like, do you want to listen to this?
Yeah, and you know that I think apps started doing that now, like, when you're on your phone and they start advertising for apps, like, at the bottom when you're in a different app.
Oh, really?
For the new, like, upgrade, the new iOS 7. Like, mine doesn't do it. I haven't done the upgrade yet. But, yeah, like, out of nowhere, it'll just start, like, going off. It's like, whoa, what the heck? It's like, oh, it's an advertisement.
Yeah.
Like at the bottom of the screen, I'm like, oh.
Wow. Here's, I think Sandra is calling now. Sandra, good morning.
This is Sandra.
Good morning. You're on the air. How are you, Sandra?
Well, good morning. How are you both doing? I've just been listening to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome
back.
Yeah, we have a new listener, which is great. And so, Sandra, we're glad because today we're not going to have any technical problems, and we're going to be able to hear every word that you said. And you wrote a book called "We Don't Die: A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death."
I did.
When was this book published, Sandra?
Just this past January.
Oh, wonderful. So it's pretty new.
Oh. It's new, and then it skyrocketed to number one grief book on Amazon this year.
Amazing.
And then top, it was number four, I think, motivational book, because it's very motivating. And I was just, if we went to the Amazon page, I was just beneath Dr. Phil. So it was very cool.
Very
unexpected.
Nice. Yes,
but,
for sure.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to write this book?
I literally wrote the book in 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And
as crazy as that might seem, I have been kind of undercover on this expedition just for myself, looking for life after death proof just to calm my own fears.
Right.
And I never, you know, somewhere I thought, well, maybe someday I'll write a book, but most people know that, you know, we believe, well, who are we to write a book? We're not special.
Yeah.
However, after my dad died, we can talk about grief a little bit, but I learned a lot about the grieving process, and what I learned I knew would change lives. Mm-hmm. And so I very cautiously approached a publisher, scared to death that they were going to think I was a lunatic for wanting to write about life after death and grief. And when they said yes, and they asked me, of course, have I ever written before? And the answer was no. So I did have to write a couple of chapters just to show that I really could write. And when they said yes, the publisher looked me in the eye with tears in his eyes, just like, you could really impact millions of lives with what you know. Mm. How soon can you get it written? Well, that's all I needed to hear, and I had 6 weeks free between jobs, and I just sat down and was in my jammies most of the time with my cat by my side and just pumped it out.
Wow. So this happened based on or because of personal experience. Your dad died, and how long ago was that?
He died May 11th, 2010, so just over 3 years ago.
3 years ago, I see.
That's
and
that.
Yeah, I can imagine what an impact it can have on a life. You know, my parents, thank goodness, are both still alive, and I'm dreading the day when they won't be. And I wanted to ask you, what were you doing before you got into this and started writing the book and everything?
Well, I still am doing what I'm doing.
Oh.
My day job, I call it playfully, is I'm a chef, and I work with race car teams.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Cool.
I get closest to you guys as I get to Long Beach
every
year for the Grand Prix. And I have a tent. I work with my mom. We've been doing this for, I think, 28 years.
Wow.
Long time.
Yeah.
And we set up these breakfast, lunch, dinner buffets for the race car drivers, the teams, so that they can eat something healthy and get away from the cars for a little while. So, so I travel with them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow, how cool.
It is. It's weird, but it's good, and I'm a part of something big, and, you know, I get to cook for some cool people. So I've cooked for Paul Newman. Right now I cook for Dr. McDreamy, Patrick Dempsey, and a bunch of cool people. Bobby Ray Hall, the race car driver, and lots of nice people.
Awesome. Now, I wanted to ask you, a skeptic's discovery. So I imagine you were like most of us, did not believe there's anything after death and so forth. Now, now you claim that you know there is life after death, and you break some of the myths and so forth about it. What makes you an expert in that? How do you know things that most of us do not?
I wouldn't say I'm an expert, Sam.
Uh-huh.
I want to say that, well, let's see, how can I put this? I think skepticism for most people is very healthy.
Right.
And I spent my life more than just skeptic. I mean, I was so opinionated. If you were to tell me 20 years ago that I'd write this book, I would say there's no way in hell. No way. I don't believe in that stuff. I think people that believe in that are crazy. They should get a life. So I think as human beings, you know, once long ago we were happy-go-lucky children and everything was going great. Well, then things started happening, you know, whether somebody called us stupid or somebody didn't want to play with us or whatever. And as we start growing older, in our mind, this little voice starts. And you guys know the mind. You know, when we look in the mirror, we're too fat, ugly, nobody will love me, not good enough, you know, with all the fears and things. So I think it's a human tendency to have skepticism and not believe what other people tell us and be really opinionated about it. So to answer your question, you know, I had that fear of dying, which I talked about just in the beginning, and it was so heavy and scary and, you know, just like when we look at the stars and we think, who are we and what is our life for? Or if we have a loved one die and it's like, oh my God, are they gone? Will we see them again? All that. So it just developed in me in this huge fear of dying. And so very hidden. I really went to see, does anybody have any proof of anything? Right. So it led me on a journey of, oh gosh, I'd love to tell you the story about going to study with a medium because it's pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But I studied with, yeah, a medium, some psychics. You know, I dabbled in that world a little bit. I went into the world of near-death experiences. We always hear about those. But what is that? You know, my skeptical mind used to say, oh, sure, people see the light. Yeah, that's what happens when our brain shuts down.
Yeah.
I think, you know, many of us skeptics don't take the time and really research and investigate, because when I did, I mean, there's over 200,000 documented cases of near-death experiences. Even one gentleman, Dr. Ken Ring, went one step further and didn't just want people's experiences when they flatlined, so to speak, but he took blind people that had never seen ever and documented their near-death experiences, and they could accurately see for the first time. They could tell the color. You know, one lady could tell that her husband was wearing his green shirt and that the doctor had a conversation with him, and the doctor's pen fell out and the husband reached over to pick up the pen. Now, she was unconscious on an operating table and could see that. You know, so it's these kind of things that it's like when you start digging, there's a whole heck of a lot of information.
Okay. So you're saying there's probably more overwhelming evidence that there is life after death than there isn't.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
If we're willing to look and do the research, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because it's so easy to say, and obviously in a short interview with you guys, I can't tell you everything, much as I'd like to. But I have a lot of it on my website that people can find out for free. If
yes.
They go to wedontdie.com. So let me just tell you that right now.
Okay. And I see you also have a sandratemplin.com, which you guys can check it out and find out about you more. And go ahead.
Yeah, the story I wanted to share about working with a medium is I had an opportunity just for fun to see a stage show of a medium, and my inner skeptic didn't believe in any of it, but I was sitting there to be entertained. I had gone with a friend, and it was interesting because this medium would tell people not just messages from the loved ones, but like so specific that people would start to cry, like not just your mom loves you, you know, or whatever, very specific. And so when I finished watching the show, which was really inexpensive, I thought, well, this lady's going to pitch her book or pitch something, and these people were plants in the audience. You know, I had it all figured out.
Right.
But none of that happened. So that inner skeptic still was there, but the girl that, like, longed for proof of life after death wanted to know more. So I went online, and Doreen Virtue is her name, Dr. Doreen Virtue, was the medium, and she offered a weekend course in mediumship with the promise, if you came to the course, you would be somebody who could accurately tell the deceased around other people.
Right.
And that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, there's no way, but maybe there is. You know, like, I just had to know. So very discreetly, I flew out to Laguna Beach for a weekend and took a course that I couldn't afford to take, charged it on the old MasterCard, just because I thought, if this could rest my fear, you know, fear is such a awful, awful, awful thing, especially when it wakes you up at night and you can't think of anything but.
Or when it immobilizes you completely.
It does. Yeah. It does. Totally shuts us down.
Right.
And so I take this course and I show up in this little conference room, and there might be maybe 20, 25 people in the room. And Doreen Virtue was there. And she says, you know, I want to rest everybody's minds. We're not going to jump right into it. You know, there's nothing to fear. Let me give you a little education about how we do medium readings. And so she had everybody take a partner. And she says, sit in your chair and sit knee to knee. Now, we're not going to do it, but I'm just going to show you the stages of doing a medium reading, private medium reading. So I sit with this woman, and we grab hands, hold hands. And she says, okay, now imagine that there's this invisible energy. And she says, imagine it connects you guys heart to heart. So the two of us were imagining that. Okay, great. And she says, and imagine, you know, obviously it's a very safe space, but close your eyes and one of you go first. And she says, I just want you to invent, if you were to see a person standing behind your partner with your imagination, just invent somebody. There's usually a description about them, maybe what they died of, and very often there's some profound message that comes through too. So she says, just make something up. So she says, just take 10 minutes or so and, you know, use your imagination. So as a chef, right, I've got a good imagination. Uh-huh. And so I just made up, and this completely made this up in my imagination, that her grandfather was with her, that his name was Jan. He was her mom's father. He was a fisherman in Denmark. He died of lung cancer, and he wanted her to tell her mom that he was sorry. He had never verbally said, I love you, while he was alive.
Right.
And I could see this man. He had blonde hair, blue eyes, really red skin from like windburned, and a big gap between his two front teeth. So I opened my eyes like, okay, your turn. And there's just streams of tears coming down my partner's face.
Uh-huh.
You know why?
Tell us.
Her grandfather was named Jan.
Oh, really?
Fisherman in Denmark.
So it was all
died
true.
Of lung cancer and looked like that.
Wow. Well, that's pretty interesting stuff. So what was I going to say? I wanted to ask you a question. Oh, you know, I mean, death has always fascinated people and scared them to death, no pun intended. And so I think over the millennia, people have come up with all kinds of theories and stuff, including using religion to explain some of these things. But the thing is, it remains a mystery, you know, and it's not in the mainstream that we don't die, you know, and that's what I'm saying. So you're always going to have to deal with the skeptics and so forth. But yet again, I mean, there's a lot of people that do believe in this. And I think if nothing else, it doesn't matter if it's true or not what you believe, but it's how it makes you feel, you know. And I think if it takes away some of the fear and the grief and so forth, because it's hard for, you know, Mia, I mean, do you know anybody close to you that died or anything? You never had to deal with that?
Yeah, my grandfather.
Oh, really? So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's pretty tough, right? When did he die?
Yeah, that's when I was much younger. I think I was about 7 years old.
Yeah.
And then my uncle had passed away kind of around this time a year ago.
Yeah.
So that was pretty
recent. It's pretty intense.
No
but
pain. And I hope neither one of you guys go through it in the near future. There is no pain worse that we experience as human beings. Some people say it's easier to get a cut or a burn, anything, even physical pain, than it is over grief. Because when we lose someone we love, and this is what I want to give you guys and your listeners, because we don't think about death too much, which is fine. You know, we're living life, and this is how it should be. You know, and death is kept pretty quiet. Rarely do we go to a funeral, hopefully, or our loved ones, you know, might pass in a hospital or whatever. But if you get that call that somebody you know died, whether it be an accident or even if they were older and they lived to 102, it's still hard. In our brains, we form a connection to somebody. And so it's very much similar to somebody who's addicted to like a drug or an alcohol. Like, we're addicted. Now, this is all chemical stuff happening in our brain. And of course, if we were to describe it, we would say we love someone. I mean, of course I loved my dad. Loved my dad. But in our brain, there really is this chemical bond that goes on. And so when somebody dies, that bond is broken. Mm. So much like somebody goes through a withdrawal process from drugs or alcohol, right. We humans go into grief. And it's nasty. It's painful. Our brain's trying to rewire itself without that person or, you know, without getting that blast of the chemicals in. And there's pain and anger and depression and awful. I mean, it is awful, awful, awful.
Right.
And so one of the things that I realized is when I went through it, first of all, you know, I thought there was something seriously wrong with me. I thought, this can't be grief. I mean, because this is so bad. Mm. Like, no human being could ever feel this bad, is how I felt.
Yeah.
In fact, there's over 1 million grief-related suicides a year around the world. And I really truthfully attribute that to people getting so low and not being able to handle it and not realizing that it's actually a normal part of grief.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
And so let me just have a little, tell you guys why I was so passionate about doing this. Is after Dad died, I learned a lot about grief. And during the time too, I had horrendous arguments with my siblings. You know, we always hear about families that come apart when a parent dies, or couples that get divorced if a child dies. And I thought, what would have good, normal, loving people turn into such monsters? And so one of the things that the brain does while it's trying to rewire itself is it shuts down part of our brain that's used for memory and for perception and for our mood and communication skills. So the three of us could be having one conversation and we could walk away from it each feeling something different actually happened in the conversation, because grieving minds can't store information properly. So this is kind of like an aha moment, thinking,
yeah,
oh, we're fighting about one thing, but we're taking away differently. Long story short is I took every bit of grief information that I could find and that helped me, and I put it together on an audio that I posted online for free. I bought the domain name survivegrief.com, uh-huh. and it's still there. People can go and press play and listen to the 70-minute audio.
Oh, wow.
Well, I did this just a few months after Dad died with all the stuff I had. And what happened is I just posted it a few times on Facebook. I didn't know internet marketing or anything. But people started to share it with two friends, and then more friends. And then in a very short period of time, 3,000 people in 15 countries had heard it.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
They start writing me that it eased their pain, that it gave them hope. And then finally, when I got emails saying that it prevented suicides, it's like, this needs to be in a book.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so you went ahead, put it together in 6 weeks, which is amazing.
Which is amazing.
But it's not surprising, because I think by that point you were pretty much immersed in this and you know what you wanted to write. You know,
yeah, so. And it went through a series of edits. I mean, it wasn't perfect. There's, you know, was typos, and they came back, and I had to rearrange the chapters. But I literally, if anybody wants to write a book, you don't have to be anybody special. In fact, we are all special. And I just imagined, this is what I did, because I've never written a book. I imagined the person sitting in front of me that had lost, I actually imagined a guy, because I didn't want this to be a chick book, you know, and I didn't want it to be a spiritual book. I wanted it to be a book that if you were skeptic, you could read it and you could understand, you could have faith, and I could blow your mind, actually. So I imagined a guy sitting in front of me who was a skeptic, maybe about mid-30s, businessman, but he had lost a parent. And so I decided to write this book like I'm talking to him. So most people feel when they read We Don't Die that I'm talking just to them, because I am, and especially men who say, gosh, I never thought I'd like any of this. I can't put it down. Even I cook, like I said, for the race car teams.
Right.
One of our race car drivers bought a book just to support me. He's not interested in life after death. He's not interested in grief. But he just thought, well, I'll support the chef. Well, he called me and wanted to order three cases because the end of the book is about how to live on planet Earth while we're here. You know, work through your fears, go after your dreams, have juicy relationships. It's super duper motivating. And so for the motivation thing alone, he's like, this is the best book I've ever read. So this guy owns a car dealership in Texas, and he gives the books to his customers, to his friends. I mean, it's crazy.
Wow, very nice. Well, amazing, and it's impressive. And everybody go out and get We Don't Die, A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death. Sandra Champlin, give out your websites again.
Sure. WeDon'tDie.com is the best one because it's hard to spell my last name. Or you can go to SandraChamplin.com.
Okay. And I see there's also WeDon'tDieBook.com, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Lots of avenues to get to the same place.
Great. Well, you obviously know what you're doing, and you're subscribing to the internet age, and that's good.
Yes, it's true. And speaking of that, just to leave people with, because I know we didn't have a lot of time to go through my proof, but everybody's got that skeptical mind, and I just want people to look at the world around them. And at one point, this earth was just rocks and trees and grass and water, and somehow over the ages, I mean, we've got things like internet and cell phones, and you know, if we were to tell somebody 150 years ago that they'd have a car and there'd be a box inside with voices coming out, you know, they'd think we were crazy.
Right.
Our skeptical mind gets used to the way things are and no longer finds the miracles and things. So start paying attention and realize that there's so much more that meets the eye, and you know, this whole world really is possible.
Cool. So I would imagine this helped you a lot in dealing with your grief and everything, now that you understand things a little better.
Yeah, you bet it does. And and it's like a handbook for being human. Anytime I'm having a low day, I can pick it up and read a chapter about something and get inspired again.
Great. Wonderful. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It was
amazing. You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And I'm definitely going to read the book. You got me all curious now.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
You too, Sandra. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. So, death, man. All right, well, we talked a lot about death, so let's continue to some other things. I'm really excited about this. Amazon is going to start 7-day delivery in New York and L.A. That means you can get packages on Sunday.
Oh.
And they're going to utilize U.S. post office workers to actually do this. You know, they're obviously going to pay them
pretty
and everything.
Exciting. Yeah.
But it's their day off, you know. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, I mean, the thing is that, you know, now they're starting like same-day delivery in some places. It's like amazing. It's going to kill all the stores. I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
There's not going to be any stores left, you know.
Although, I mean, it depends. Like shoes and clothing, stuff like that. I don't know. I feel like...
Yeah, that stuff is going
to
stay, right?
Store, but
right. Although look at companies like the company that sells shoes. What's her name?
Like the Zappos.
Zappos.
Stuff?
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
They sell a lot, you know, and you know, so I don't know how important stores are going to be, but I mean, I like having a mall. I like having stores that I can go to and stuff.
I do too. It gives me options.
Yeah.
I like to be able to like try stuff on and be like, okay.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not really.
But that's close. You know, everything else, like electronics and books and things like that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you can't justify stores anymore.
Yeah.
So, but I'm excited. I buy a lot of stuff from Amazon. So if I can get it on Sunday, what the hell? You know, you order it on Friday, you get it on Sunday, and it's free shipping too. All you do is you pay $79 a year, and then you get like unlimited video, like Netflix included. And you get 2-day shipping for free.
Oh.
Yeah. So when you use it a lot, it's worth it.
It's a pretty good deal. Yeah. If you use it a lot.
Yeah, I do.
For
sure. I mean, you know, just because otherwise, every time you buy something for $10, you pay shipping, probably $5 or $6 or something, just for the shipping.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So and that would take like a 5-day shipping or something, where here you get it in 2 days. You know. And sometimes it arrives in 1 day, believe it or not. You know?
Wow.
Or if you just add $4, you add $4, you get it the next day. So it's not a bad deal at all. So
nifty.
Yeah. So we're moving forward. Amazon, you know, they still barely make money, man, but they're so big, and they disrupted everything. Yeah, I mean,
how?
Profits.
Oh.
Yeah, because their expenses are huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean, they can sell a lot, but if you don't have money at the end of the day at the the bottom line, it's pretty tough. But it's a big company and it's crushing everyone. So.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But you know what I discovered yesterday? I actually just discovered eBay. I mean, you know, obviously I've been on it for many years and stuff.
No, I don't think I've ever bought anything from eBay.
I know. I never bought anything from eBay at all, you know. And but then I thought, you know, I'm reading this book on, like, the early days of the PC industry and stuff. Like,
Course you are.
Yeah.
Of course you are.
In the 80s and the 90s and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And
that sounds very interesting.
It is to me, believe me. So I thought, God, I missed the magazines from back then, like PC World and PC Magazine and stuff, because they don't have them anymore. So I looked up on eBay and I bought some $70 worth of magazines, like old magazines and stuff.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, but it's cool because I'm excited about it. You know, I remember, I mean, just think, you know, if you can go back to like, you know, like, I'm talking like 30 years ago, you know, and read about how naive everybody was about computers and everything, and then you know, and thinking of like how things have evolved, it's just amazing, you know. I mean, the past 30 years have been like light years for progress.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you couldn't care less, I know.
It's just all like way over my head, like computers, what?
Yeah. So today is Veterans Day. We forgot to mention that.
It is.
Yeah, and you probably noticed the traffic was light, huh, this morning, or was it?
You know, oh, you're right, it was. Yeah, I flew here, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Come to think of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There really weren't too many cars on the road.
Yeah, no, I mean, banks are closed, schools are closed.
That's right,
that
yeah,
stuff,
it's like
yeah.
a... Kind of like a holiday.
Well, it is a holiday.
Yeah. How about that? How about that?
Yeah.
Who would have
thought?
So,
but I think it's a day to really think of our veterans and everything, mm-hmm. all the soldiers and the troops and the people that serve the country, you know, because they get forgotten, you know, and then they come back here and they can't fit into society, you know?
I know.
And they get like bad jobs and or like menial jobs and minimum wage and stuff, and that's discouraging, you know. I mean, after you've been in battle and in the way and so forth, and
but
you've
now
got
what,
a family.
Now, what is the difference between Veterans Day and Memorial Day? Isn't
Memorial
that kind
Day is
of,
for the ones that died?
Oh, those are the ones that passed. Okay.
Right, and veterans are I
the
guess,
ones
more
that are
for
still
alive and
alive
well
and fighting.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
I know of people are very very close to me that suffered from PTSD.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. I'm not surprised.
It's
I
tough.
Mean, the stuff that they see over there
right.
is just frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And so you come back to a society that is not exactly prepared to take you back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was reading, that's why, you know, we should help them focus on careers rather than just on
right.
jobs, you know, because they need to think long term.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's a tough... It's a tough thing.
It really
you
is.
Know,
you
they
know?
Go, they really put themselves out there, risk their lives, and then come back, and they can't, you know, they can't even get through a full night's sleep because they, you know, wake up of like these insane nightmares, and it's.
I mean, they turn them into fighting machines. You know, how do you come back as a fighting machine and try to live in a society that's not, you know?
I know. It's almost like they need to have some kind of like. Decompression like program or something like that they can go through before they actually come back home, you know
right.
what I mean, something that kind of, you know, helps them prepare for, you know, what they might have missed out on or what might be different or changed in the world that's, you know, different from being over in, you know, Iraq or, you know, like somewhere over there in the Middle East that
well
you know,
I'm
they
sure
were stationed.
You know, I'm sure they have that. I can't imagine that they wouldn't, you know, and but maybe not everybody takes advantage of it.
Right.
And
yeah.
some people try to deal with it alone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the suicide rates are just like, you know, it's just so scary. You know, they're saying there's like 20 suicides a day of veterans, of people, former soldiers and stuff. And that's, you know, so I think today is a day to actually think about this and what we can do for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and which reminds me that not really coincidentally, but there's a new show that launches here tomorrow, and it's called U.S. Vets Unplugged. So that's going to cover, you know, the lives of vets and things like that, what they have to deal with. So I highly recommend that if you guys can listen tomorrow at 11 on Channel 2, and that would definitely make it a little more relevant to you. Another thing, of course, is that typhoon in the Philippines. They're saying over 10,000 people are dead or missing.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot of friggin' people, you know. And I mean,
tragic.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, they're saying it's like worse than hell. You're looking at some pictures there, and you see flattened cities, you know. And,
yeah. Yeah, and that's got to be so tough for loved ones to not know if they're just missing or dead or if they're trapped or something. Like, to just not know has got to be so tough.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they're saying bodies lie in the street, and people have to look at that, and my God, man. I mean, that's just like... a terrible thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the natural disasters we can't do anything about. I know.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Because nothing can like really like prepare you for something like that.
No.
Even you know, children that have survived and now have to see this, like that will mess you up.
Yeah. And these are areas with a lot of poor people too and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So, it's not gonna be. They're not gonna be recovering anytime soon from something like that.
Right.
You know, and finally, I wanted to bring this up that you know, China has a one-child rule, right?
Right.
And because they have over a billion people, they don't want to expand too much. So, but what happens if a family has a second child? You know, because I mean, it's not like you're gonna go there and what's the word I'm looking for?
I mean, I would think they would just put them up for adoption.
Yeah. Well.
Because, I mean, there's, you know, tons of people here in America that would love to adopt.
Yeah, but you have to wonder if they even allow adoption, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure
but that's
how
a
that
good
system
idea.
Works.
Yeah, that's a good thought right there. But the thing is that they're saying that the second child has, like, no rights. So they can't even go to school. So this girl is saying, you know, I have to watch my sister go into school and enjoying all the benefits, and I'm dying to go to school, but... she's never been to school, you know, so she borrows her sister's books and library card, and she's begging for lessons, you know. So, I mean, that's like, you know, that's like crazy. What do? You know, I mean, you can understand the one child rule, but at the same time, what do when you have other children, you know? This woman says the reason she had her was... she was, I guess she fell ill or something, and she wanted to have another child to take care of her when she grew older. So she had another child, which sounds kind of selfish.
Yeah,
you
that
know?
Sounds very selfish.
Yeah.
Because now this kid's whole life is just devoted to being like, you know, just growing up, watching everybody else have all the fun, just to end up taking care of a sick parent.
Right, yeah.
Not get to do anything for yourself.
Yeah. But
that's sad.
I know. It's like, it's pretty controversial. I mean, do you bring a kid if you're like, she had polio and damaged her leg and stuff. So, the mother did.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Hmm.
Yeah. And there's another couple stories, but I don't have time for it. So, let's go ahead and wrap up.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So everybody, go out and get Sandra Champlin's book, We Don't Die. Sounds pretty interesting to me.
Very intriguing.
And we do have a copy of it, so we're going to read it. And what else? Enjoy your Veterans Day. Don't forget our veterans.
Of course.
Our soldiers. And that's it for today, Mia.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll see you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show, or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. LATalkRadio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.